And a special occasion today because not only do we have David Murata of Murata Wealth Management, but also, two for the price of one, Megan Russell is here as well. And a very interesting topic, which is so timely. We're going to be talking about the helicopter government surveillance, the right to privacy, and we're going to kick it off with talking a little bit about Edward Snowden. Megan and David, welcome to The Shilling Show.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
All right, so let's go to Edward Snowden. Now, people are scratching their heads going, gosh, I know that name. I remember hearing about it, but I can't remember exactly what happened. So let's go back about what happened with Edward Snowden about 5 years ago.
Yeah, it was exactly 5 years ago today that Edward Snowden revealed to the world, basically, that the United States government was collecting massive amounts of data on all of its citizens and using that for its intelligence purposes. And in an interview with The Guardian, Edward Snowden said, NSA and the intelligence community in general is focused on getting intelligence wherever it can by any means possible, that it believes on the grounds of a sort of self-certification that they can serve the national interest. And originally, we saw the focus was very narrowly tailored as foreign intelligence gathered overseas. Now, increasingly, we see that it's happening domestically. And to do that, the NSA specifically targets the communications of everyone. It ingests everything by default. And these revelations were amazing. It was a whistleblower moment for the government. And for that, Edward Snowden gave up much of his own personal freedom trying to warn us about the government abuses. And I think history should record Snowden as a kind of hero. His motivations, at least seemingly, were very altruistic. He did not want the American people to continue to be lied to by the government and NSA officials. He did not want Congress to continue to be lied to by NSA officials. And he didn't want to live in a country where such intrusions into our personal correspondence and privacy were so massive.
So let's go to this concept of hero versus villain, or even some people I've heard have called him a traitor. What would you say to them, and particularly if they said, well, he made his point, but he could have done it in a different way that was not so destructive or dangerous?
I do think it's really funny that in this conversation where we're talking about the government violating our right to privacy, they're saying, hey, we wanted to keep the NSA private. We wanted to keep it a little under the radar. He made it so transparent, and that was really upsetting. But then they're criticizing that. It doesn't make any sense. It should be transparent. It needs to be transparent. Keeping it in the government and behind closed curtains is not acceptable.
He was concerned in many ways, or fearful, as you reference in your piece, Megan, that the things that he brought forward would eventually just be forgotten or overlooked. And, you know, we're 5 years out right now. I mentioned that you might have to remind people who this was. But do you think that his fears have been realized?
I think it has largely been swept under the rug, and people have not had enough outrage to actually create the changes that we need. You know, maybe there's some more disclosures and some terms and conditions that people don't read. Maybe we have a few extra jokes about, you know, disappearing in the night because of something that you say online. But largely, we haven't changed anything. And if anything, there's even stronger surveillance capitalism going on, and companies feel, you know, even more empowered to make money through data brokers than ever before.
Yeah, this is something that a lot of people don't realize because it's not tangible. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the problems is that a lot of people don't believe they're really swept up in this. I've got to tell you, I mean, I know in my mind that it is the case that people are collecting information on me. But whenever there's some sort of a data breach, I kind of like to go there and see if they actually have anything on me. They say, well, they got your email. But I'm always curious, like, did they really get this information on me, or was I just swept up in a very broad way? And so how do we put people in touch with the tangibility of these violations?
There's a really interesting video series called Growing Up Online. It's targeted at middle schoolers, but they show middle schoolers walking into a room, and they're surrounded by journalists and lights and cameras and microphones. And the journalists ask them very personal questions, like, how did you feel about getting this sports trophy in 2 years ago? And the kids are so confused because they're just surrounded by strangers. And at the end, they asked the kids how they felt being asked all those questions. And they were like, oh, I felt really uncomfortable. And they asked them, well, do you know how we got any of this data? They say, no, it's all from just public places online, just from public places online. They were able to find, you know, everything from their home address, who their parents are, when they were born, you know, all this information about their personal lives. Now imagine taking it a step further. What about that online portal that your doctor has? What about, you know, your credit card history that places like Equifax have? I mean, it is an insane amount of data that is out there. Data is the pollution of the internet. You can't help it. You just make it when you're online. And we need privacy controls. We need privacy, a right to privacy, in order to keep it clean.
Are either of you aware of anybody who is actually put together a dossier? I mean, I think it would be so helpful for somebody to look, and you could change the name, but say, here's actually what someone has on someone like you, and take a look at this. And you can well imagine that if it was you, there'd be the same sort of level of detail. Have either of you seen anything like that? Because I think it would be incredibly helpful, again, to get to the tangibility of this.
I haven't seen any third party, but I know that on even Google is willing to be transparent enough that if you log into your account and you go to your account page, you can see literally every time you have ever touched a Google product in just a list of your browsing history. It'll be like, you watched this YouTube video on this day 5 years ago. You watched an ad on a website that Google didn't even own. And, you know, on this day at this time, it's amazingly detailed. And that's the kind of stuff that the government has access to.
David. And what most people don't realize is that the NSA has made agreements with all of these companies to have a backdoor into their software such that they can collect all of that information. And I suspect that they pay Google and Facebook and YouTube for all of that data. And they also make it illegal for Google and Facebook and YouTube to tell you that they have an agreement with the NSA. I know one company that every year publishes a letter to say the NSA has no backhooks into our software and into our data. And the year that this letter doesn't come out, they do. Because they're it's illegal for them to say that the NSA has those hooks because the NSA has made it illegal in their warrants against the companies.
You know, I saw something that I found almost incredible, almost so hard to believe. But I've done more research on it. I want to run this by you in our remaining minute here before the break. There was a guy who said, I had a Google phone, an Android phone, and I traveled all around Washington, D.C., and I was never connected to any Wi-Fi network or anything like that. The phone was just simply on, and Google was tracking me wherever I went, whenever I got in and out of my car. And it made me thankful that my phone stays in my car turned off 99.5% of the time. But, you know, my son was hearing me talk about this. It's like, gosh, I'm really worried about being tracked. Have you heard that? And is that verifiable?
It is verifiable. And the reason why we know this is that one of the ways that the government catches newspaper reporters who reveal stories is they track phones to figure out who has talked to that person and where has that person been. So what you need to do to be a whistleblower in the government is you need to leave your car behind because it can be tracked. You need to wear a disguise and you need to get taken somewhere without any means to track it. You need to leave your phone behind. The reporter needs to leave their phone behind. And without all of that, they catch whistleblowers in the government and they try them for espionage or treason.
You know, this is just astounding information. We welcome you here, 434-977-1070. Should there be a right to privacy? How much surveillance is going on? Just everyday people. And what about the helicopter government? David Marotta, Megan Russell here with us from Marotta Wealth Management. And The Shilling Show will continue with this subject on the other side of news and weather. The Shilling Show continues here. It's a Tuesday edition of the program. Thanks for being with us weekdays from noon to 2. Make an appointment with The Shilling Show. In case you do miss a moment, don't forget our podcasts available online at shillingshow.com or wina.com. And we're continuing here with David Marotta and Megan Russell from Marotta Wealth Management. today getting into the topic of privacy and these invasions of your privacy, helicopter government surveillance, and also noting the five-year anniversary of Edward Snowden and all this information that came out. Before we move on from Edward Snowden, I seem to recall he was in Russia for a while. Where is Edward Snowden today?
I believe he's still in Russia because Russia is keeping him safe from the American government. It's interesting. 5 years ago in March, James Clapper, the NSA director, was asked in front of Congress, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans? And he said, no, sir. And Snowden said that was the breaking point. 5 years ago in March, seeing the NSA director directly lie under oath to Congress, you know, there's no saving an intelligence community that believes it can lie to the public and the legislatures who need to be able to trust it and regulate its actions. So if you think about in terms of, you know, breaches of, you know, national oaths, mm-hmm. it seems to me that James Clapper is the one who started it and Edward Snowden just said it right. For that reason, that's one of the reasons I consider him more of a hero and think that if President Trump wanted to do anything useful, he'd pardon Snowden and let him come home, because mm-hmm. that would be the biggest message that his revelation to the world was good, and we need to undo some of that.
Do you think he'd be safe? It would seem to me there's a lot of people who'd be hacked at him and dangerous people. I mean, we were talking off the air about being on lists, on government lists, all of us. I mean, certainly there'd be some people who are after him.
I think there would. There would be some, although President Obama pardoned one of the people, who was accused of espionage. And I think that's another, you know, and I think they can live a normal life. At least he could pardon him in Russia, and then Snowden could decide whether or not he wanted to return. But he really has given up a lot of freedoms mm-hmm. trying to expose how our freedoms are being curtailed.
There are countermeasures that some individuals can take. And I don't know about you guys. I use a browser that has a VPN option on it and a private browsing and all of that. I've got all sorts of blockers and everything else loaded on the browser. Are those things any use at all? Have you done research into this technology, and do you protect yourself if you do use a virtual private network to browse?
They are really useful, but honestly, even the best trained government officials cannot be private on the internet. Like, I mean, it took Snowden, I mean, if you've seen Citizen 4, the documentary, you can see him on his computer wearing a sweater reversed so that his face and his computer are covered as he's working on it, because he's trying so desperately to remain hidden while mm-hmm. he's talking to the reporters. And you have to go to pretty crazy lengths to not get swept up somehow.
So we talked earlier about the problems with cell phones, but how about like laptops and desktops, even plain old telephone service? Are we worried about landline phone conversations and all of this as well?
Yeah, Obama once said he welcomed the debate, and then at every turn he tried to shut the debate down
right.
repeatedly, and we never really had a debate as a result. And I think that's the biggest and most tragic part, is that none of our government officials actually made this a high priority. In the battle between Republican and Democrat, I think we've lost the interests of Americans. And all Americans on both sides of that debate, you know, of that political debate, should be worried about this. But Obama said that government officials are not listening in real time, but he's never acknowledged that the phone conversations are not being recorded for later use.
Mm.
So, you know, we actually don't even at this point know how far the depths of data recording go. We just know that the government has incredibly large servers storing all of this data. And it's stored by a lot of the companies, just in case in the next few months or the next few years, the government might want to deliver them an NSA warrant, which is also hidden in private. And, you know, if anyone believes that the government is only populated by angels, they're sadly mistaken. I think the last two administrations should prove to us that there's at least a government that you don't like.
At the very least. There was something that I'd never heard of before that came up under the Obama administration, the social and behavioral sciences team. Megan, tell us, what is that? I had never heard of that.
Yeah, so Basically, a lot of government officials realized that nudging is a concept, that you can very subtly change people's perspectives by exposing them to, maybe you'll expose them to something they don't really like, but you'll expose it to them so gradually that eventually they kind of start liking and agreeing with it. And in this manner, you can effectively do psychological manipulation. And so they realized, hey, this is pretty cool. Maybe we could use it and we'd be able to manipulate the public at large in order to think things that we want them to think or do things that we want them to do. And of course, it was all from a great virtuous standpoint of trying to make us better. But how do they know what's good for you? They don't really.
What do we know about what specific messaging they were promoting? Do we know?
I've never seen it actually put transparently, like, hey, we're trying to promote this message. I've never seen any sort of disclosure like that. But theoretically, they're using whatever channels they want to use to try to promote things they want to promote, because now they've got a task force set out to do that.
Well, I would hear these things even being in the radio business and hearing this government messaging, which was almost constant in what they call public service announcements. So the radio stations, they get their license and they promise we'll run some PSAs every once in a while. But the government messaging that was coming across, and even today, but particularly during the Obama years when it was very fast and furious, pardon the pun, was just despicable. Mm-hmm. It was anti-American, anti-constitutional, be reliant upon the government. And this was just coming at us all the time. Very disturbing.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things during the Obama administration as an employer that I had to do, required by law, is to send a certain brochure of information out that touted all of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act. And I wrote an article about it because I sent it out with a cover letter that said, while I may be required by law to give this to you, let me tell you why it's complete BS and none of it is true.
Good.
And I recommended this as a model for employers. But it's a rare employer who's going to say, you know what, I'm actually just going to take on this public service announcement that I have to do, and I'm going to mock it and point out all of its errors because I'm required by law to do that. And I might just enrage my employees because the nudging that's inherent in these public service announcements is subtle, and I have to be blatant in order to fight back against it, and I have to expose it that way. And that's just an obnoxious thing to do, but truth is often obnoxious.
Mm-hmm. Even just the fact that they wanted to get you as an employer to send it out is part of psychological manipulation, because they're getting somebody that the employees theoretically feel positive about. They're like, hey, we like our boss. Mm-hmm. And then they're getting their boss to be the one who's delivering the message of the government. That's called effective conditioning. It's taking something that people like and pairing it with something they may or may not like to get them to transfer some of their positive feelings to the thing that they don't yet like. It's marketing, you know,
on hyper steroids, indeed. And then, of course, all of us, I think, have come to the realization or are coming to the realization when there's something free on the internet that we are actually the product.
Yeah.
And so when we get a free Gmail account, or if we're using a free browser or some other free software or apps and all of that, we need to really become aware that all of that data is being harvested and being disseminated and sold.
Yeah, but it's kind of crazy because should it be even allowed is one of the questions. You know, imagine that the terms and conditions have hidden in it, hey, and by the way, we're going to violate all of your rights.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make it okay just because they disclosed it. You know, so I mean, it's one of the reasons we really need that right to privacy of correspondence, because it could clean up a lot of this mess while still allowing corporations to operate.
The question is, who's reading all that? I've got to admit, I don't read any of those things because I kind of know what's going to be in there. And quite frankly, I don't know what my options are. I mean,
right.
If I want to have, a good email service, you know, I don't know what else to do, really.
Right.
I mean, so
yeah, you either check the box or you don't check the box. If you don't check the box, you don't get the service. So even reading the terms and conditions is just upsetting. I mean, I read them all, and
good,
I find
you.
Them very upsetting. So,
and that's where some kind of civil right that's written into the Constitution would be helpful. The Constitution was not intended to try to enumerate all of our rights. It was only intended to try to suggest that all of these rights are reserved to the people because they are civil rights. And the Ninth Amendment states, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. the right to privacy of correspondence is one of those enumerated rights, and we don't get that because it wasn't enumerated.
Yeah.
It was what Thomas Jefferson feared about the Constitution, that if you didn't enumerate all the rights, then the Constitution would start being interpreted as, well, these are all the rights that there are. But we do have the right to privacy. It comes from the right to own yourself. If you own yourself, you own your thoughts, you own your behavior, you own your feelings, and you're able to decide who you want to share those with and who you don't want to share them with. We've got an article on our website. I went back and read it recently. It's amazing. It's 16 countries who have the right to the privacy of correspondence written into their constitutions. You know, and for example, just the Italian constitution, the freedom and secrecy of correspondence and every other form of communication is inviolable. And so that says right there, you can't violate the secrecy of correspondence. It's reserved for the people. And so constitutions like that protect that. Our Constitution doesn't have that. It would be very easy to write something like that into our Constitution. And the fact that our Constitution doesn't have it is why the NSA and all of the other forms of capitalist data gathering are allowed in the United States, because we haven't written that into the Constitution.
It wouldn't seem to be a hard sell, or would it?
You know, I think you'd have tons of lobbyists against it.
Right.
Because there's a lot of different interests that like collecting that data.
There's a lot of money in selling it.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in selling it. There's a lot of power in terms of politicians knowing about that. And so because of power and money, we don't have that. But, you know, there's a lot of power and money in a lot of things. It seems to me that both the Republicans and the Democrats, at least the citizens, should be able to agree that the privacy of correspondence is an important privacy.
And Michael writes in, we got to go to the break here, but he says, it sounds like the 70s and 80s subliminal messaging and old records, TV, movies. Gosh, I remember when I was in college in California and we took a marketing class, and they told us to start looking in the print ads in magazines, and you could see like little things that were very suggestive, or the word sex was written into, you know, to the clouds that were coming up out of, and it was there.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, just amazing. All right, let's go to the break. Our final segment ahead, 977-1070, Megan Russell, David Marotta. We're talking about the right to privacy. Helicopter government. I want to get to that on the other side. Chilling Show rolling into the final segment for this hour. Megan Russell, David Marotta with us, Marotta Wealth Management. We're talking about government surveillance, the right to privacy, which presently doesn't appear to exist in this country, and also this helicopter government concept, which I just love it. And it really, Megan, ties into what I was talking about earlier today in leading up to our time together. People relying more and more on a government and actually embracing it instead of fighting back against it.
Yeah, definitely. So helicopter government is the idea that helicopter is like helicopter parenting. So helicopter parenting, that's when you do things like you show up in your kid's classroom to lecture the teacher for giving your kid a bad grade. You know, you're micromanaging the details of your kid's life. You're holding control. You've got all the reins, and you're deciding what happens to your kid because it comes from maybe a loving place. You're trying to make sure that they end up well in life, but in reality, it just hurts your kid. It makes them afraid. What if I make a mistake? My parents always there. It makes them dependent. Like, oh, I don't even need to bother trying. My mom will take care of it. And it sometimes makes you have a need to please, to do what makes your parents happy instead of what actually makes you happy. Well, when you take it to the government level, it's just even more detrimental to our outcomes. I mean, if we're constantly living in fear, we're not living the good life. If we're dependent on the government, we're not actually going to achieve anything. And if we have this need to please instead of our own aspirations, again, we're not going to be living the good life. We're not going to be happy.
So, you know, when we see this going on here in government, and we see it at every level, and people just relying on the government for everything, it's the antithesis of what America was founded on. It's the antithesis of what made this a productive and prosperous and good nation, which was that we were capable of being independent, and that it was shameful. I don't know if you've ever heard the term too proud to accept charity. So I grew up with that. I know David knows the term. My parents used to say it, I don't know, just in passing, not about us, because we didn't have that need, fortunately. But David, that term is gone now. In fact, they want to make everybody feel comfortable being reliant upon the government.
Yeah, it is gone. And I think citizens need to realize that the interests of the government and the interests of the citizens are not always carefully aligned. They're not aligned. The government wants to do things almost as though we're a herd of cattle. We just want to do it to everyone because that's even and able to be done quickly and easily, and just have one rule that kind of fits everybody. But if you're a stray sheep or you're not even a sheep at all, you know, then we don't really want you to have the freedoms to go do your calling and to follow your dreams and to not be, you know, subject to all the things that all the other sheep are subject to. It's just easy to make everyone go in the same direction.
Yeah, it seems like they don't even care if they lose a few sheep.
Right.
And
yeah.
And you had, Megan, in your piece, and this is available online at maradaonmoney.com, and I encourage people to read these pieces that you wrote on this. But you were kind of talking about animals in the zoo and how they are totally and completely dependent, mm-hmm. and what it does to them. And then to looking at people who are dependent upon the government through various forms of welfare, which is just sickening if you read all of these things. But in under the guise of helping people, we are destroying them.
Yes, definitely. Zoo animals die young because they don't have enough stress in their life. Stress is actually good for animals. It's good for humans. It's good to have challenges that you overcome,
adversity,
aspirations,
yeah,
that you try to achieve. Yeah, when everything's just handed to you, you may as well just sink into the couch, never get up again, and die. It's really depressing.
I want to spend the last 2 minutes or so on the topic of fighting back. I mean, we talked earlier about capitulating to some of these privacy notices that we get just because we feel like we can't do without the service. But what is it that individuals can and should be doing and advocating for?
Well, I think definitely fighting the psychological manipulation. Mm-hmm. Being aware that people are trying to change your perspective actually helps your perspective not be changed.
Yeah, fighting back mentally and verbally is sort of the first step of asserting yourself and making sure that you're not. If a doctor is trying to manipulate you, he'll say, you know, come sit on this table, roll up your sleeve.
Yeah, can you hop up here for me?
Yes, exactly. and if you don't want to get the shot, you need to be a bad patient. Well, we need to be bad citizens. We need to be citizens. When the government suggests something, we immediately go to what is the ulterior motives of the government? And do I actually agree with those ulterior motives? Do I actually want to comply with what the government is trying to do? Or do I actually want to be an independent and self-reliant individual and go handle that myself? Now, you may still take the government handout, but when you take the government handout, you should also thumb the government at the same time and say, I think this is a stupid idea. And we do that for our clients all the time. We monkey with the tax code that the government has put in place, and we try to get every deduction that we can. And then we vote the bums out of office who put all those stupid deductions in there in the first place, because a flatter and simpler tax would have been better. So I think you need to be critical of the government. And if you're not being critical of the government, you're actually succumbing to the government's nudging.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the problem that we face here locally. And really, I think by and large across the country, is that so many people are so reliant on the government that they're fearful of being critical of them.
Well, your work on the radio is helping millions, or maybe not millions, hundreds of thousands of Charlottesvillians know that the government is not the answer.
Well, I'm glad to serve that function. You know, there was a time when the local government was really pushing back against this program, and I'm grateful to the management of this station that did not succumb to that pushback from local government. They're welcome here anytime to argue their case, but we will prove them wrong time and time again. David Murata, Megan Russell, tell people again if they want to read the pieces that you have written on this topic.
It's at maradaonmoney.com.
Okay, and it's well worth your time. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Shilling Show. It's been a great hour.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.